This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Hi and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. When type A for Computex, I'm here with Kevin Michalak.
Hello, thanks for having me on the show.
And Nicole Scott.
Hi.
Yay, so this is kind of cool. This is my first kind of like live in one room podcast with a bunch of people for this edition of the podcast anyway. And it's exciting because it's kind of much more interactive, right?
Yeah.
So let me bring up some of the topics we wanted to discuss. We're here at Computex, all of us, right? So obviously a bunch of announcements. The things I want to talk to maybe start with is not related to Computex. It's the fact that the reason I ran into you really, and you said, hey, how do you like your Key One? I got a Key One this week, well, just before coming to Taiwan, and I like it a lot.
The new BlackBerry Key One, you're back on a hardware keyboard.
Yeah.
Getting used to it again.
Yeah, and so...
Getting used to it again.
And because you are the guru of all things BlackBerry still, in many ways.
Yeah, CrackBerry Kevin is out of retirement this year. I didn't see that coming at all.
Really? You didn't?
No,
I mean, no. But wait.
That's a story we should tell.
But even with the priv and stuff, you didn't think?
I mean, I killed CrackBerry Kevin off 3 years ago. That was a sight. I mean, look, we got really excited about BlackBerry 10 back in 2013.
Right.
You know, once the apps didn't come, you knew the carrier support evaporated and it was going to be a world of hurt. So for me personally, I mean, I've moved on, right? I've been...
You've been Android and iOS.
iOS, Android, done touchscreens for many, many years now. And coming into January this year in CES, you know, I sent out a company update email to 20... you know, to 80 people that was 20,000 words long saying, you know, CrackBerry will continue to be in maintenance mode this year. And maybe I'll write a blog post in February for our 10th anniversary.
Yeah,
nice. And I went to CES and, you know, Alcatel's North American head of PR had the Key One there, a prototype getting shown off. And I was like, oh my God, what is this awesome phone? And I had to see it. And lo and behold, Kevin gets excited about BlackBerries. And this is one I love. So...
Yeah,
back, you know, in business.
So, I mean, obviously, I'm not the target audience, and I personally wouldn't buy one, even though I think it's phenomenal, because I'm just so used to the software keyboards and, you know, phones like the Galaxy S8 and the LG G6 have such large screens, right? That for me, like, that extra real estate just, you know, even further validates the software keyboard. So I'm very happy with that. But I think there's a lot of people who are really going to dig the Key One. Like, who do you think, like, obviously the old BlackBerry users, but what do you think, Nicole? Like, have you played with one?
Yeah, I have one, and actually it's really interesting. I thought that I would have moved onto it by now, but it hasn't made it as my primary, like, my primary daily driver, and I thought genuinely that it would. Like you know with this job, you're always getting a new phone,
sure.
And you're always moving on to them, but I keep on actually going back to the G6, because I have nails on my thumbs, and the BlackBerry keyboard isn't as soft as previous years, so it's kind of glossy, right? So I'm having trouble
with the nails. That's
with the nails. So, like, because I was a BlackBerry user years ago, when I lived
used
in Canada.
Be trained in it. Yeah.
So I used to be trained in it, but I find I'm slipping, right?
And that's interesting. I haven't heard that from anybody else yet on the Key One's keyboard.
Yeah,
I mean, it took me, because I've been on touchscreens for years now, right? It took me probably 2 days to get used to typing on it again, maybe 4 or 5 days before I kind of got back to the CrackBerry addiction. But it did come back, and you know, I was lucky to get this an early build back in February. And since having it, I haven't switched back to anything. And I mean, I was iPhone 7 Plus, Google Pixel XL. I picked up an S8 Plus just to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm like, there's something weird. There's some like variety of factors between look, feel, battery life, which is fantastic on it, that's helped me to it without even thinking. But what shocked me, like CrackBerry Kevin, of course, I'm going to love a BlackBerry. But it's the other people I've seen, like Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, who is doesn't have a daily driver this year because he flips phones like I change underwear.
Yeah.
And that's become his phone. And a lot of the folks from like the Android Authority team who are in the same boat, they're all
Josh,
hardcore.
Josh is rocking one too.
And it's little things too, like you know, they're using pro mode on the manual mode on the camera, and they're swiping on the keyboard to do the settings instead of smudging up the screen.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, screen real estate for typing, you actually get a lot more because you're not popping up a virtual keyboard to cover so much of the screen. So you actually get in those certain apps a lot of real estate.
I think there's something to be said about the scrollable surface.
But it comes back.
Keyboard.
It's a keyboard phone, right? Like, right. If you used to love a physical keyboard and you miss it, this is for you. If you've never used one, probably a tougher sell.
But even if you haven't used one, there's enough screen real estate to make this useful, one.
Yeah.
And all over, like, all around, it's a really well, like, you know, complete package. Like, I think Snapdragon 625, really good processor. It's mid-range, but it's pretty damn close to a high end. It's about the same architecture as the 810 used to be, so that gives you an idea of what we're talking about. It's pretty good. And I shouldn't say architecture, because it's actually very different. It's more like the in the same benchmark league as the 810 used to be, which, you know, powered the Nexus 6P, so we're not talking about too long ago. But with the advantage of even better battery life, and because they made the phone not too thick but a little thicker maybe than average, you get this great battery life combined with 625. I mean, 625 is the phone.
You get a headset port too.
Yeah, you do.
You're holding the phone, and I'm like, you don't even see that anymore, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, thank you.
625 is the same chip that's in the Moto Z Play, and it's one of the best, like, long time battery life champions.
Yeah.
Headphone jack. You know, honestly, I'm very happy that a lot of manufacturers are sticking with it, because I was really worried that Samsung would get rid of it and then it would be the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if they do something, if, you know, right now it's like Apple versus Samsung, and one has it and one doesn't, the rest don't count, right? Basically. But I think overall it's a great package. The camera is decent. It's not amazing, but
it's
pretty
okay.
Good, pretty solid. Yeah. I've gotten good pictures out of it. The industrial design, I think, is very unique, very BlackBerry, you know, the ergonomics, the balance of it in your hand while you're typing, the kind of this grippy back, everything is really refined and polished. And the only thing personally in ergonomics that I can't get used to, I'm still having a hard time even after almost a week, is that the power button is, to me, on the wrong side.
Yeah, I hear that all the time. And I'm like, why do you use a power button? You unlock it with the space bar with the fingerprint.
I'm constantly pressing the side
button.
But
why are you touching it? You just stick your finger on it and you go like that and it turns on. You're wasting precious time using the phone wrong. They designed a power button for your fingerprint. Why would you touch that button? Why? Unless it's completely turned off, why? It doesn't make sense. Did you program a fingerprint in your phone?
Yeah, you did too many times. So
I was just pressing away.
I'm just like...
Well, no, look, I get it. I just, I'm so used to, like... I guess what I'm saying to you is most of the phones... You can't just unlock them by tapping the fingerprint reader. You have to first hit the power button.
Well, but iPhone, you push and hold on your home. You push this, and hold in one fluid.
Oh yeah, you're right. This works on depends on the phone. There's a lot of phones. Also, honestly, for me, the big thing about using the power button is when I want to see my notifications, the screen is black, right? Like, and I just want to see what's on the screen. I just push it. I got the time. I got my notification.
Okay.
I put it away. So that's why, you know, if the convenience key could be programmed to do that, then I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Because you're right. The power button is not what we need. But a glance mode is what I need. Yeah. Because as you said, putting your fingerprint on
it,
this unlocks it. That's not what I wanted. I didn't want to unlock it. I just wanted to see
it. You can do double tap on the when it's off.
Yeah.
To
wake
the screen.
Do double tap.
I turned it on, so it should work. There you go.
Yeah.
So anyway,
you got options.
It's like I kind of wonder if there is anything they could have done to make it completely programmable, because that way they'd have two convenience keys and you could do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think actually doing both programmable would be cool, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely a phone that's about shortcuts. So
let's talk about that, because I really think they're onto something. That justifies the hardware. That and the scrolling, which you just described, you know, Joshua Vergara using manual mode on the camera and me browsing the web, it's been super helpful.
Yeah.
Those two things alone to me make the hardware keyboard really, like the fact that you can hit, you know, the W or the G button and it gives you, you know, Gmail.
Yeah.
Long press and short press.
It's good.
Yeah, long press and short press actually is I can't stop using it, right? Like, that's the one thing where I have wanted to go back, because I launched my Instagram and then I launched, you know what I mean? And then I've actually programmed some of them to go like directly to one of the folders of my Gmail, You know what I mean?
Like, totally.
I love things like, if you
program your H button to be home, but it's going to open up Google Maps and put in your home address.
Right.
You know, like, that's cool. That's like drunk proofing your phone.
And you know what? The shortcuts are great too. Like all these shortcuts that you have options to access, like turn on airplane mode, all this settings type stuff, which, you know, and in that sense, I think it's really well done. I personally haven't really used the Hub or any of the BlackBerry software because I don't care because I live in a Google world.
No, you know what's interesting?
I've gotten into the Hub.
Have you?
So tell us about why. I love it. Let's hear it.
I love it. Basically, it's because I generally in Google will stay away from my other email addresses and just commit to my one work one, right? But in the Hub, I've pulled in everything, right? So then, like, I'm a lot more on top of some of my, like, other things that are more desktop-oriented, right? So, like, I'll sit down on my computer, and I'll deal with a lot of different, like, workflow stuff because I just keep Gmail to Gmail, right? It's just my Gmail, and that's it.
See, I love that. And this is what I love about this phone compared to, say, BlackBerry 10 or BlackBerry OS before is the flexibility. So for me, I love the concept of the Hub. For a lot of people, I'm not a Hub user. I remove it.
I had no idea.
And the reason is, we all have like digital ADD these days because we have too much stuff. You know, when BlackBerry came out with the flashing red light on their phone, all you received were emails and text messages. It was a very convenient feature.
Right.
If I turn on the flashing red light on this phone, it never will turn off because between tweets and Instagrams and whatever, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So I turn that feature off. And for the Hub, it's the same thing. A unified inbox for me means I will get nothing done all day. So I need to. I'm one of these people now who's like, well, I do Instagram on the toilet, and I do Twitter at the end of the day in bed.
You've heard it here first, guys.
Yeah, and email when I have to do work. That's what I'll pay attention to only. And I have to compartmentalize the way I work through a day, or else I will literally accomplish nothing. So I had to retrain myself.
I've been aggressively on the road since CES, basically. So I've had 2 4-week trips, and then 2 1-week trips, and then 2-day trips in between. So basically, I haven't been in Taipei at all. So this feature is why though I haven't moved on to it as my dedicated handset, it's been my secondary one. So I pull it out at airports.
Interesting. Right? Management by BlackBerry. You're running the biz from
the phone instead of a computer. I'm running the biz from the phone.
That's awesome.
So
that's great.
Like, it hasn't made it as my primary daily driver, but it's my second phone.
Yeah,
right?
I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's made it in, right? It's definitely made it into my... It's made it into my bag, but it hasn't made it into my SIM card.
What has me excited is obviously this is the first new BlackBerry from this TCL licensing agreement. Mm-hmm. And I think you said it earlier, right? Like, it looks and feels like a BlackBerry.
It does.
And that's what got me excited because, you know, again, I didn't know what was going to happen, right? And when I picked this phone up in January at CES, I was like, oh, it's a BlackBerry. Yeah, like, whatever else, it's a BlackBerry. And then as I've used it, I'm like, okay, it's the best BlackBerry I've ever had because I don't need to carry a second phone anymore to have a great BlackBerry.
I think it's the best BlackBerry ever.
No, ever.
Of all times. I mean, forget the Bold 9000, I think was the best for a long time.
Agreed. Yeah.
That was at the time an amazing phone with attitude. It was awesome.
Do you think the keyboard, like how, in the, you're a BlackBerry expert. Yeah. Where does the keyboard rate in the world of BlackBerry?
Very good question.
I mean, I've used them all, but it's so long ago, I don't know.
It's a very good question. So I actually rank it as like a number 2, number 3, but there's like a caveat to it. And a lot of people listening, because I will repost your podcast to CrackBerry, and then you're going to get a lot of people chiming in. They're going to say, well, I love the keyboard on the Passport, right? And the Passport is this
really super wide,
different device. But the reason they love it is because when your hands are kind of far apart, it's quite comfortable to hold. And me as a utility person, you know, like form over, what, function over form follows function. That's what I was trying to say.
Form follows function.
There we go.
Yeah.
I will stick one of these on the back of my phone.
Yeah.
And I have one of these for everybody listening, this weird phone ring thing, style ring on the back.
Yeah.
But the reason I love it is because instead of holding a phone by squeezing my palm, like hands into it, typing, I can widen my hands out like this. And it's super comfortable typing. And I can also lie in bed with my arms and do this. So with this, it makes it an amazing keyboard.
No more black eyes.
No black eyes. It's not excessively wide where you're wasting finger with every, or room with every finger movement. So it's tight and typable and accurate. If I don't use it, it's still good, but it's not as comfy as if I use that. But to me, it's probably like a top three. And some of the changes, you know, I think why they went slightly glossier, and the Bold 9900 has always been recognized as like the best BlackBerry ever, which had more of a, for typing, which had more of a smile to the keyboard. It was kind of slightly rounded. They went away from that to more straight lines because of being a trackpad now. You know, right. It'd be slightly weird if it was curved.
Yeah.
And then you're like swiping the left down, up down, left right on it. So I like it though. It's been really good. So, it also saved my face one time because I tripped in a hotel room and was crashing into a bedside table and slammed the phone out in front of me. Whoa. And it landed on the keyboard instead of my like face.
Wow.
It's pretty good. It survived.
So I did good. So would you say that which one is the best keyboard then? You said number two or three.
Bold 9900. It's hands down was the best. People who love the Passport would argue it is there, but I'm like, it's a three-row weird keyboard and I've never gotten into it. I just couldn't. But a lot of people love it who bought it. And then I'd put this right there.
I mean, the thing about this phone is that it's the same size as a Pixel XL, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's actually a reasonable size.
The footprint.
Some people argue, I know, because they think it's too big. But that means that you still get a lot of screen real estate. And that's the thing I love, is that if I don't want to use a hardware keyboard, I'm still happy.
So because you pulled out a Pixel XL, I need to give you my rant on price.
Okay,
so my
go
biggest
for
thing
it.
Is, I think this phone, like probably one of the best things for the key one is the affordability factor, which I think it's really affordable. Because when I bought my Pixel XL from Google and shipped it to Canada, and I only got a 32 gig version because I couldn't buy the 128.
Yeah.
It was like $1,150 or $1,200 Canadian by the time I got it to my house.
What?
That's insane.
That's crazy.
Key one is $729 unlocked in Canada when they start
How much
that.
Is in the US?
$549.
Yeah. You know, it's...
It doesn't feel like a cheap phone. That's right? You pick it up. Like, I pick up these two phones and I'm
when they announced it at MWC, I was there. You were on stage. It was kind of awesome.
Really weird, unexpected again. 2017, really crazy year.
But I played with the phone and I was like, you know, I was a little skeptical on the pricing because in my mind I was thinking, in terms of spec, it's basically a Moto Z Play, which is a great phone.
Yeah.
And it's not a cheap phone, it's a $450 phone. So I felt like $549.
I
was like, that's a little too much. But then now that I've actually played with it extensively, it is so well made and it's so unique. I'm willing to pay an extra $100 for it, basically, is what. Look, all around, I mean, I'm not a BlackBerry person and I'm really enjoying this phone. And I think you should check it out. If you are
it's not embarrassing to use a BlackBerry now, which I love.
I know, right? It's kind of cool, actually.
It's
because
kind of cool.
When I was at Google, all us cool kids had BlackBerries. It was
so
like,
weird.
We would whip them out from the Google people, and they'd be like, oh, so this is what you guys use. We're like, the key one.
But actually, I think that's why everyone's using them.
Because
it's
cool.
It's because it is like,
retro.
It's different. Right? And like, not a lot of people have it. If you've got one, you know what I mean? Like, you know someone. Well, you know Jason, but you know what I mean?
That's true. Thanks, Jason, by the way.
Thanks, Jason. Oh, thanks for the Tumi case, actually. So mine came with a Tumi case.
Mine came with a case, too,
and
but I didn't put it in because I like to live dangerously.
No, well,
we know you.
I know my...
With phones falling off your scooter and stuff.
I know. So I'm really excited about this case. It looks good.
But I really feel ergonomically... It's a delightful phone. And I think that spec-wise, it's just the right balance of everything. It's not super high but everything has been just reduced down to like 80, 90% of a flagship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's plenty good enough for the kind of, especially for what they're aiming
different
for this
era,
enterprise,
different
right?
Battle. Enterprise, power user,
power
users. I mean,
exactly.
The thing that I love about this phone is... You know, they've said there's a portfolio of devices coming, right? So this isn't like a one-off and you won't see another BlackBerry. And obviously they're going to make some that are full touchscreen and some that are keyboard phones. I don't think it's just going to be all keyboard. If they lean into this notion of like, we will never build you a phone that doesn't have like huge battery life, that you pick it up and you're like, this thing's solid and you could, you know, throw it against the wall and it doesn't break. Couple in the security story. Now they have a niche that's there for years to come, right? It's almost like whatever Samsung is doing with their media-centric device, you know, let's you know, force the edge of physics and stretch the glass to the edge. BlackBerry needs to do this. It's like, you know what, guys, it's okay if it's a little bit thicker, but it's gonna, you're going to get benefits for it, right? Yeah, we're going to make it stronger. We're going to make the battery life better.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you're not going to out Apple Apple. You're not going to out Samsung Samsung, but you're going to carve a sustainable presence there. And when I look at what just happened with, like, LG and the G6, that's what they have to do. Because it's like, okay, so Samsung's late. G6 gets to hog some of the spotlight at MWC. For how long?
Yeah, and also...
And they didn't even, like... And then it's... Nobody cares anymore.
As I mentioned when Michael was on the podcast last week, it's like, you know, it was kind of the proto-GS8, right? Like, the G6 was like the... Gave us an idea what the Galaxy S8 was going to bring to the table, but didn't quite polish it as much, right?
Yeah.
I want to transition to the next one just because I don't want to run out of time.
Okay.
But the other thing I want to bring up, because we're talking form factors, is kind of like this interstitial moment. I didn't put it in the notes, but you guys seen the leaks from EV Leaks of the V30 from LG?
I don't believe
and
it.
It's it's a slider. Remember the chocolate phones from LG?
Yeah.
But instead of the bottom having a keypad, it has another display. So it goes chunk, and you get an extra little mini display when you slide it, a vertical slider. And I don't know if it's real, but EV Leaks is pretty spot on. Mm-hmm. So the point is, I just want to bring it out because we're talking about LG, is that I'm actually excited to see more new form factors coming. Because now that we know we can make phones that are all screen, right?
Yeah.
Why not bring on some cool stuff? Remember the N95 dual slider, right? Like, imagine you do the thing, but you put capacitive screens. Or maybe, you know what I want to see again is either a flip QWERTY or
my
Android with a front and a back display. Or have a slider QWERTY like the Torch, but done right.
Sure, yeah, I would love
to. Or the Priv, I guess.
Put another touchscreen on the back of the phone and just make it a little thicker.
The Priv was the Priv was kind of the right thing in that sense, but it was so big and bulky, and it just wasn't that great.
Yeah, no, the Priv was. You know the difference? The Priv was a BlackBerry made for Android users to kind of get them on a BlackBerry, and it's an Android
phone
made
for BlackBerry users,
which is what they needed to do.
You nailed it.
They nailed it because the BB10's gone, right? That is like a there's nobody left there to build anything on it.
Sure.
Nobody's going to resurrect
it. Speaking of full screen devices like the G6 and Galaxy S8, we just saw yesterday the announcement of the Essential phone from Andy Rubin and his crew. Andy Rubin is one of the founders of Android. You know, he started, he was at Danger doing the Sidekick before that. The guy is legendary. And so I want your kind of raw takes on that.
Well, I like the story of, you know, I was out drinking with a buddy, and we decided we ruined technology into smartphones. So now we're going to fix it. that was my Cliff Notes, Cole's Notes takeaway of reading the story.
That's what he said in his blog post, right?
He's like, we were thinking about everything that went wrong. Maybe we could fix it with something.
But what is your take on, I mean, there's three key takeaway here for me, is that we have now a new player that, you know, could live or die. As we know, it's a very cutthroat business to be making Android phones. But at the same time, the guy has enough, you know, connections that he can pull it off.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at how polished their website is and how far along they are with everything, you look at the size of their team.
Yeah, it's already amazing what they pulled
off. It's pretty impressive. But what I'm really excited about is not so much that they did, similar to the Mi Mix, where the screen go all the way to the edge, but their differentiator, I guess, is that there's a cutout for the front camera, which is very clever.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm most excited about, because ultimately the screen real estate is going to be the same as a Galaxy S8 or a G6, I'm excited about the titanium and ceramic. I've been saying for years we need more ceramic phones, and Xiaomi's been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is, we're talking industrial ceramics, the stuff they use to coat cylinders in cars, for the space program, that stuff does not shatter.
Yeah.
Like, you need so much force to shatter that stuff. I don't think it breaks very easily. So I'm excited about that. And titanium means, as they showed in their videos, that if you drop the phone on concrete, you don't get a blemish at all, which right now on aluminum you will get. And to me, that's actually the most common drop I get. It's not so much that I drop it and the glass shatters. It's more like I will drop it from maybe 2 feet height, like I'm sitting, and it falls on polished concrete, and now I have a nick.
Yeah.
It's not a big nick. It's no big deal.
But you know
I'm
it's
like,
there.
Damn.
Yeah.
Whereas titanium is just going to bounce right off.
Yeah.
So that's got me excited.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't believe the stories about ceramic, to be honest.
Really?
With you. You don't I mean, buy because it? Like, because I review all the Xiaomi phones, right? And they scratch.
Oh, ceramic does scratch.
Ceramic scratches. Right? It's strong, but you can...
But you can scratch it, right? Yeah. So, and the Mi Mix, this is the slipperiest phone that's ever been made.
Really?
Right? And I like carry it around with gloves because I'm afraid that I'm going to, like, going to break. And I only bring it out to do, like, comparisons with other phones, and then I put it back into its case and I put it away because it has ceramic around the edge.
Yeah, right? I'll be
well,
curious.
That's the thing. This does not have ceramic around the edge.
Yeah,
it's titanium
so this
around
doesn't
the
have ceramic around the edge, right? So that's one up on the Mi Mix, right? Because to me, the Mi Mix is not usable because it has ceramic around the edge.
And it's also too big. This is a 5.7 inch.
Yeah,
it's going to be
true.
The same size as the G6 and the small Galaxy S8.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm really super excited. Where is that? About that green emerald color.
Oh, I like that. That was my favorite part.
Okay.
I was like, nice.
That's beautiful. It's true.
The gold accent.
That's a classy phone.
Very, very Asian.
They said coming soon, but I'm like, no, you got to lead with that color.
It's a
lead with that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Where is that?
I agree.
Somewhere in here.
Yes. What was the name?
There it is.
Yeah.
It's a very...
What's the name they give it?
Ocean Depths.
It's a very Asian-feeling aesthetic to me. And I think that's very smart because they're obviously only selling to the U.S. at first, but you can tell they're thinking about China already with this phone. I'm excited about the dual camera, too, because honestly, having used the Huawei cameras with the monochrome and color sensor, it really adds so much dynamic range to your photos. And if they do an even better job at the software than Huawei is doing, we're going to get some pretty impressive results from this. You know, they claim that it's dual camera because they wanted to make it thin, but that, if you look at the specs, their phone isn't any thinner than the P10 Plus I'm using right now, right here, to backup record with. And so I don't really buy we needed to make the cameras thinner because they're already pretty thin. But they don't protrude, which is great. Snapdragon 835, of course. We're going to segue into more 835. I just want to say, I just wrote a story for Mobile Geeks you should go read about this, how Windows 10 is coming to the Snapdragon 835. And I think the 835 is literally eating the world right now. Like, everything that is good is on Snapdragon 835. It's kind of crazy scary. And, of course, this phone has it. 4 gigs of RAM, 120 gigs of storage, no SD card. And that display, I'm a little vexed that they didn't extend the display all the way to the bottom.
Right, at that point.
And that seems a little odd, but if you look at the exploded view, you can see they have the SIM holder in there, they have the USB connector, and they might not have the space. But you know what? No headphone jack. Boo.
No.
I'm sorry. To me, that's really important.
I like that there's clearly a vision behind this phone.
There is.
Right?
Yeah. And that's Andy, right?
Yeah.
He's always
but here's the
like
thing.
That.
I look, you know, one of my complaints about Google Pixel XL, Pixel non-XL.
It's so blobby and generic.
It is devoid of passion. It is an emotionally dead phone. And when you pay that much money for it, I'm like, I want something that I want to stare at sitting on my counter.
You know, this is particularly
true. And I pick it up
true.
And I'm just like, oh. And this clearly has, like, passion behind it, which says a lot.
This is even more true now that we have the Galaxy S8, which I think is the first really passionate-looking phone from Samsung.
Wow,
it has a personality. No,
I think the Note 7 was pretty...
Yeah.
Awesome, actually. There's something about the Note 7 I still think...
But,
I don't know what...
So wait for the Note 8, because I think that aesthetic is going to... But to me, the screen size...
Yeah.
And the fact that you can see a Galaxy S8 from a mile away, you know right away it's a Galaxy S8.
Right.
Like, that personality... Like, Samsung's never really hit that personality. The Galaxy S6 and S7, with their edges, were starting to begin that trend.
It's true. The
but
Note 7
now
was
just
beautiful,
like,
but the S8's actually, like, iconic.
Yeah,
it's,
and that's what I mean. And so this is even... To me, this is one step way beyond that. To me, this is potentially going to be even more iconic...
In the green, yeah.
...than the iPhone, because it's going to be interesting to see...
In the black or matte black, it's like, eh. But that color is like...
So they didn't pull off the edge-to-edge, all-the-way screen, you know. And I think having cutouts for things is perfectly fine. I think we're going to see more and more of these screens with rounded corners and cutouts for significant parts. Because it makes sense. It's interesting. I think for this phone, they probably have the earpiece right around the front-facing camera. Because it's the only other place it'd be. And we know from the Mi Mix that this piezo thing
doesn't work,
right?
Yeah.
So
not at all.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm excited about this phone. I almost want to pre-order one. but I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get one to review, so I'm not going to spend my money.
You should pre-order and then cancel.
That's kind of douchey.
And then sell it to China.
No, but it helps them get carrier support. This is the thing. If you don't pre-order, then they can't go get the support.
I don't think they want carrier support.
Well, support from partners, support from anybody. You know, that's my biggest question mark here is, you know, building the phone and that, they've already done an amazing job as a team. The next thing becomes that reality of business.
Selling
it. It's like, well, but it's not, it's selling it, it's supporting it, it's, you know.
Yeah, right.
People have complaints, they have questions. Who's doing your help articles? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? Who's answering the phone if somebody complains? And if you do that stuff wrong, you'll not build a business, right?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, Nextbit is an example of a company who pulled it off and they got acquired, right? I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Did they pull it off then?
Well, no.
Getting acquired? I mean, LinkedIn got acquired. Do you think that was?
That's the definition of success in Silicon Valley.
Well,
though,
look,
so actually, I think I read a very good article about LinkedIn. Like, it was a failure. It got acquired.
If you look,
I mean,
at,
they didn't
like,
make it.
The number of phones like Sagen or whatever was that Sagen?
That Sagen phone.
Sagen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the number of phones that didn't make it, and Nextbit just crowdfunded, shipped, and made it, and they got acquired. You're going to say they didn't really get a chance to prove themselves because we never saw the sales. We don't know if they...
Well, they didn't go mainstream.
Right.
You know, they didn't
But
go...
maybe that's what he wants. Maybe he doesn't want to go mainstream. Maybe he wants to be like the super fresh, super cool phone that's better than the iPhone.
Well, it's kind of like the OnePlus attracted its core audience, right?
Yeah.
So to me, so what's interesting to me here is for it to be a success, it needs to get everybody who's currently going after Pixels and everybody who's currently going after OnePluses, and that core audience needs to move.
You know
to
what?
That.
It's
and
working.
And then that's
working
impressive.
For me. I'm seriously thinking that maybe if the Pixel 2 doesn't entice me, which I don't think it will, because I don't think they're going to go wide, ultra wide screen, and I'm sold on the ultra wide screen and edgeless now. I think I might go, because I know that Andy Rubin is not going to mess up Android, as he's already said.
He's got to fix it now,
right? Exactly. But my point is that I'm actually very excited about this phone, simply because of that. And I was also with Nextbit, because a lot of the guys came from Google, and if you look at the phone experience, it's really good.
Yeah. How about the price point on it, given, you know, because OnePlus is
super
a little more affordable.
Well, that's the thing. OnePlus, that's why when you said OnePlus to me, it's not even the same league. Because
but it's the core audience, though.
I definitely agree with you. It's definitely the audience that has the OnePlus, that has that kind of Pixel, that's in that
and,
genre
and,
of
and
the buying off carrier.
And Nextbit fits in that box too.
Exactly.
Nextbit fits in that box. And like, do you think that there's any more people that can like that they can grab into that, or has that market already been defined by number?
I think there's lots of room for that, especially because people are leaving the carrier subsidies behind in droves in the U.S.
It's crazy how it's happened. So this is really fun. Like a couple of years ago, between Android Central and, well, mainly Android Central, we were doing this on. We were really trying to like get people to understand why they should buy Unlocked, and everybody was still bought into carriers hardcore. And we were doing stuff, and people are like, "Never will I buy an Unlocked phone ever, ever, ever." All of a sudden, last I don't know 6 months or something. Complete flip. It's like, I will never buy from a carrier. I only want my phones unlocked. I'm like, what happened? Like, what? Like, went to bed. I didn't pay attention one day, and the entire audience flipped its mindset on it. So, huge change.
Yeah.
But I think there's two levels of success, I think, right now.
What?
We just said it, right? One is if they can actually beat the intenders who are thinking Google Pixels or OnePluses. Mm-hmm. Or Nextbits, and well, I guess what was Nextbit, and this works. That's like step one, and then step two is to actually reach the mainstream audience beyond that, which they probably can only do if they first went over that other audience. But I think you're right. Like I'm more excited about this phone than the next OnePlus or the next Pixel.
I am as well, especially because OnePlus has kind of gotten rid of their Oxygen team, so. Like, now, that kind of, like, freshness that they were bringing into, like, a lot of their OS, they're going to lose.
The vision. I think
the
that's what they make. They
the vision.
Yeah, and, you know, let's round off the essential phone talk by talking about that quote. I don't want to call it modularity, but the fact that it has this magnetic attachment for accessories that are only powered by pins and then use Y-gig, which is a 60 gigahertz, 6 gigabit per second wireless connection, like close proximity wireless connection to communicate. And their first demo of that is a 360 camera, which is very bandwidth intensive.
Yeah.
I personally think the camera looks like crap. It does not look like the level of quality of the rest of the product.
So that was the most disappointing thing. So they, and it's funny, today in Taipei at Computex here, I had a meeting with a Montreal-based company. I don't know if, do you know Immervision?
I've heard of them.
So Immervision has been around 16 years working towards 360 cameras.
Okay.
And they design custom lenses for all these different applications. So actually, like what's going in the Asus phones, what's in the Acer, what is it, the 360, Holo 360 camera they unveiled not too long ago.
Yeah.
That's all their technology. They design it, they do the software, they do the stitching, they do the algorithms that do it all. And then they license it to the companies that do it. So they're powering a lot of this 360 stuff. And instead of doing fisheye lenses, they do, what are they called? Panamorph, which is much more built like a human eyeball. So the range they get is way more than like 180, it's like 210.
Okay.
And when they do what they're building for the smartphone cameras, you know, it's not like two different cameras. It's like very much one camera with two sides to it that they build into the frame. And when you start to move these cameras, the phone around, it is seamless between their software stitching and that. This is not using their technology. And they should have, because the Immervision stuff is by far the best that we're seeing right now. And so I like the accessory they built. I think it's neat, but they picked the wrong technology for their first flagship accessory, because it does look pretty crappy for the 360 cameras. Sorry, rant. It happened today. I was like going through it all, and I'm like, are you guys doing that camera? And they're like, no. And it shows bad.
I mean, beyond the technology, to me, what is kind of egregiously obvious is that it doesn't look like as polished as the phone does.
No.
And even as their little home, you know, render of their home device, which I don't really want to get into because this is a phone show anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's like, to me, like, I don't want that wart on my beautiful essential phone. Are you kidding me? Even if I do like 360 photography, give me something that, I would have expected something that's like, this looks like cheap plastic with like a completely different rounded design. Ugh, like give us something that fits that industrial design that you just created with this phone. Make it out of ceramic too. Like it's $199. It's not that cheap. I mean, I know you bundle it for $99 right now, but I don't know. I think that's the most disappointing part to me. I mean, I think the modularity thing is very smart and cool and very interesting implementation. But I think that the first accessory is just blah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And then, of course, we don't know much else about it. A lot of hype.
We're talking about it. They succeeded.
Yeah.
We kind of have to. I mean, we knew this was coming. And I've been looking forward to it. My initial disappointments, if I have any, is I wish it had been full edgeless. And I wish it had a headphone jack somehow. And the rest, but I'm very excited about the ceramic and titanium. I'm excited about the specs and the dual camera being half monochrome. I'm excited about this modularity thing, even if I end up never using it. I don't even buy for a second the upgradability part. Forget it. I keep my phones a month, so I don't really care. But because this might become my daily driver, like the Pixel is my daily driver every year, or the Nexus was in the past, maybe I'll keep it a year, so maybe it will come in handy. I don't know.
It'll probably look crap because it's ceramic. I'm still not sold.
I'm having flashbacks. And my wife has a couple of nice, and they're expensive, ceramic watches.
Now they've like never Rados or something.
Bell and Ross and a Chanel.
Okay,
so expensive. And she beats the hell out of everything. She's never shattered a link, but I've definitely noticed on the Chanel
scratches.
Ceramic, there's like micro. They're not deep, but
they're not deep.
And I don't know if you can get them out. I've never thought to be like.
You need diamond to get those out. You need to recut it.
So they definitely.
Yeah.
So is it? Do you have ceramic stuff then? Like the Mi Mix gets ugly.
Well, no. So far, I have no scratches on the Mi Mix because I'm so careful with it.
You handle it with white gloves.
I basically handle it with white gloves. But the other ceramic phones from Xiaomi, the back is definitely, there's definitely scuffs on the ones that I've used. But at the same time, Xiaomi's building really durable phones. Like I dropped the Mi 5 that had the ceramic back, and I have this like hard corner flat part on the metal, right? But nothing's broken. right? Like the metal is like clearly like taken down.
And that's
down
why I'm
flat.
Excited about the titanium and ceramic combo. Is that the titanium is going to be a shock absorber and it's going to not deform, but take the blow and then bounce back. And then the ceramic is going to just not be as structural. It's just be cosmetic. So, you know, sure, the scratching will be an issue, but I'm not even sure it'll be that much of an issue.
New ceramic Apple Watch. Does that thing hold up well to scratches? I mean, I would like...
Renee, where are you when we need you?
I bought it and then I sold it to him. I bought it last year and then Crackery Kevin came out of retirement.
He
I'm getting rid of this piece.
Couldn't get one from the Apple folks? That's surprising.
Well, I told him he wasn't allowed to if I was buying one first. Because then I'd have to look at photos on Instagram all the time of my watch and I'd be like, no. So I was like, I'm buying this one. You can't have it. But then I sold him mine.
I have no idea because I'm not a big Apple Watch fan. So I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, look, I think it's cool that there's, especially people like Andy Rubin, he clearly put together a good team. Limoran is on the team. He worked with me at Pebble. He was the head of user experience.
Cool.
And he's the head of user experience there. So it's kind of nice to see some people I've worked
HQ'd with.
So
out of?
Palo Alto.
Okay.
So,
and how big's the team? You said it was big.
It's pretty like at least like 50 or 60 people.
Okay.
At least that's what's listed on
how
the website.
How long has it been going on? I wasn't really paying attention to the story.
It's clear to me it's been going on for at least a year or two.
You think
probably
it
a 2 years. But it was super stealth for a really long time. Like, we didn't find out about this until like maybe 6 months ago.
Okay.
And then he teased us with a photo of somebody holding the phone, kind of like this. Uh-huh. And you could see the edgeless display. And we all thought, they're just using a Mi Mix. Because it looks exactly like it.
Clint from Xiaomi did a mirror photo with the Mi Mix.
That's right. That was true, but I mean, it's cool to have new entrants. And honestly, you know, let's kind of briefly touch on this since we've all used iPhones. There's these, you know, there's a ton of rumors. There's always a ton of rumors about the iPhone in this time of year, you know, because it's coming soon. But do you think, like, to me right now, Apple is in the worst possible position they've been in so long in terms of their gap, perceived at least by me, who's a tech nerd, their gap in technology between the iPhone 7 Plus and, say, the Galaxy S7, 8 and the Essential Phone and the Mi Mix. They need to come out with, in my opinion, they need to come out with a phone that's full display, full front display, and or potentially what we've seen now, these leaks of, which might be fake, of a phone that's a completely front display with the fingerprint reader embedded in the glass, mm-hmm. with cutouts for the front-facing camera and earpiece with dual front-facing cameras. I don't know if you've seen those mm-hmm. leaks. To me, if they pull that off, they would finally be at a place where I'd be like, okay, I respect you again. Because right now, they haven't really done anything innovative on their phones.
They built a really cool headquarters.
Oh, they built
they
a
did.
Really cool headquarters. Man, the drone video of that's amazing.
Yeah. But look, I mean, honestly, they have... The one thing that I do give them kudos for, and then, you know, Ray talks about a lot, is that they have the mightiest, you know, processing power in their devices, right?
Yeah.
There's no doubt that the 810 or whatever is at now is much more efficient and just as powerful as the, you know, the competition right now. But that doesn't really, to me, translate into anything tangible as an end user. Perhaps some people like Gruber, I'm sure, will argue it's more smoother experience, 60 frame per second UI, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you use a Galaxy S8 or a high-end Android phone and, you know, there's no lag. They work. They get slower with time. That's still an issue. But I want to see Apple really, like, show what they can do with their billions of dollars in R&D.
Yeah.
Like, we're not seeing any of that. It's driving me nuts.
I honestly, like, you know how we all have like 15 phones in our bag all the time, and
of course we do.
I have the Apple phone among them, and honestly,
I like you call it the Apple phone,
the Apple phone, whatever, whichever one it is, the Apple one, right?
You heard it here first. It's called the
Apple
phone.
Stupid Apple phone, right? No, but like literally, it looks like a fake Chinese phone to me.
it does.
Like it looks cheap. I think
the
2D glass on the front, like when it's in the pile among all the other ones, the design looks weak, right?
Like,
and like everyone's like, it's such a beautiful phone. I'm like, for who? Children? Like, it's just,
you know,
really bothersome.
In fact, I would add that the Pixel here in my hand, XL, and the Huawei P10 Plus, which is here, both completely emulate, at least in the front, the iPhone, are boring. to me, like, I
was so boring.
It's funny. I was an iPhone when he first pulled
me
it
too.
Out.
Yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
Oh, okay, she's got an iPhone.
Oh, she's got an iPhone.
I'm like, oh, no, no.
I would never. I do have an iPhone. It's sitting over there right now. It's my alarm clock. That's
there
all I use it for, believe it or not.
Streaming this is when music you,
when,
in the hotel.
When you have 15 phones, that's what you do. You're like, oh, this phone's my music phone, and this phone's my YouTube phone, and this phone is my podcasting phone, and this one's my alarm clock. It's on airplane mode as an alarm clock.
Right I really think, though, we are at a point where, kind of rounding out both phones we've talked about today, you know, for many years, it was like, who can build the best smartphone? And that's all that mattered, right? Like, and you know, somebody would win the title for 3 months or 6 months and that kind of thing. And I think what 2017 is showing between the Key One, the Essential Phone, the Nokia throwback from MWC, it's not about nostalgia. It's about, okay, it's more like the automotive industry now. Like, there's plenty of things that will get you point A to point B. What do you want? And at what price point? You know, do you want the Ferrari? Do you want the workhorse, you know, pickup truck? Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And I think there's room for all of them, right? There's always going to be a couple at the top of the market who are playing the massive brand marketing, mass distribution game, which is, you know, the billions upon billions of dollars. But there's going to be a lot of room for these other players to come in.
Yeah, I think there's tons of room. And I think, you know, I think there's lots of opportunity and innovation in terms of form factor still, because the technologies are enabling that. Like, there's these, you know, full front displays that are edgeless, that, you know, navigate around the elements. I think to me that's pretty cool. And I want to see more of that. I want to see sliders. I want to see...
Totally.
You know, flip phones
honestly,
need to make a comeback.
Swiping on physical buttons and then unlocking with your fingerprint in a space bar, I'm like, magic.
Yeah.
I'm like, you took something that was now old school, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And why don't our laptops do it? Because I'm like,
embedding the fingerprint sensor in the space bar on the Key One was
cool.
Brilliant.
It was brilliant. Yeah. So, speaking of Essential and a Snapdragon 835, there's a big, to me, one of the biggest announcements, because it's fresh from today, but we should talk a little bit about Computex in the next 15 minutes or so. Right. But today, I'll let you tell a story. Nicole, you're the PC person.
Yes,
here.
But you attended the event.
And I wrote the story.
You wrote the story.
So, okay, Qualcomm announced, and Microsoft together announced today that they're going to be making... they're launching a new platform called the Snapdragon 835 mobile PC or something platform.
Mobile PC, yeah.
And what it does is basically taking the Snapdragon 835 and cramming it into PCs. At first, that's kind of the quick and dirty, but there's a lot of ramifications behind that are pretty impressive and amazing. So what it really means is we're going to start seeing, I think HP, Asus, and Lenovo have committed to making devices in the next few months that are going to be, instead of running Intel chips, are going to run Windows 10, full-on 10, not 10S, and are going to be kind of aimed at the premium 2-in-1, you know, ultra-portable market, like essentially us, the business people who use ultra-portables, and are going to run Snapdragon 835. And that means gigabit LTE built in on all devices, always on connectivity, super long battery life, standby that lasts forever, which right now is a big issue on laptops, as you know. And then more importantly, connected standby, which means that you'll be able to get, like, your phone right now when it's sitting on your night table with the display off, it's still getting your emails. And when you turn it on, you see everything. You don't have to suddenly wait 5 minutes for all of your email to upload to your whatever, right? It refreshes in the background all the time. So I think, to me, it's exciting. But what's really exciting is that I got to see a demo. And I was blown away, because here's the thing. I was seeing a demo of x86 apps like Office, not compiled for ARM, running on the Snapdragon 835.
And it was fast.
And that's been the kicker that we've been waiting for.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah, sure, but is it compiled for x86? Right? And like, they're like, yeah, well, we can't do it. You see it, and it's laggy.
I mean, basically, what we're seeing here is the same thing that happened when Apple went from PowerPC to Intel, where they had Rosetta as a completely seamlessly integrated emulation layer. And actually, in fact, the first year or so, half of the OS was still PowerPC and it ran perfectly fine on Intel chips. And in fact, it ran faster on Intel chips. I'm not sure it'll run faster on ARM chips than the high-end Intel. And and they've been very clear, those two, Microsoft and Qualcomm, that they're really aiming to this for like the productivity, not the gaming, not the like, you need a video editing machine.
I want to use it for me. Like, I'm not gaming. I want to be able to work
It's not for like your video editing rig or something like that, but it's for your normal everyday surfing the web, doing a bunch of Microsoft Office stuff, maybe editing a podcast, you know, editing a few photos in Photoshop that you need to upload for your web blog, whatever it is. And I think from what I saw, that, and you'll, if you have a chance, watch the video on mobilegeeks.com. It's an 18-minute video. It's a bit long.
I'll watch it.
It goes through the whole thing. And holy crap, like, I was impressed. It ran Office x86.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see any lag, any weirdness, any delays. We were in a Microsoft Edge browser, but running like 4K YouTube videos just like that.
That's awesome.
And of course, with Gigabelty, they showed like downloading a 1.7 gig file in 40 seconds.
See, that's my thing. I'm looking at you have your MacBook here. You know, I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro, the new one with the touch bar, which I feel like my mid-2012 MacBook Pro was a better machine somehow.
Faster. Yes.
But I'm like, why can't I run a SIM card in them?
Right. And
I'm
so,
like, why? Why is it so hard? I always have to, you know, Wi-Fi hotspot to my phone. I'm like, this is annoying.
But there are many other advantages over what Intel's put. I mean, you look at this MacBook. Now, this is the original 12-inch, so it's not an upgraded one. But it has a circuit board inside that's the size of a credit card. That's why the battery is so big and why the battery life is so good.
Right.
But because of that, because of the thermals and the general efficiency of 2 years ago Core M, this thing cut starts to bog down after six tabs in any browser, right?
It's
like,
not a good...
you're okay running like Audacity like we're doing right now, and a few other things, but if you have more than six tabs, you're starting to feel some serious pain. And this thing, I forced them to open more than six tabs just to see, and I got every journalist that was in the room's website up at the same time. So not just like your average website, like these sites with like ads and banners and flash, and it just kept up. And you could still scroll seamlessly, and it just worked. Now, I don't know if the Edge they're using is x86 or ARM, he didn't say, but the point is that imagine a device like this MacBook that has even maybe thinner, but now has twice the battery life, get as warm, and has LTE built in and just works all the time. That's
fantastic.
What I want. That's what I need. And now,
this came out, I bought the same one. I called it it's like, wow, they succeeded in building a time machine to 2011 performance.
Correct.
Because I was like, ouch.
Yeah.
It's painful sometimes. But, I've gotten to the point where now I know it's limitations, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, rendering that video was like 40 minutes.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, that's where I really hurt. And I have an accelerator dongle. I'm using an H.264 dongle.
Oh.
So on top of that, when I tried to do the CPU only, it was giving me a 4-hour estimate.
And you're like, no.
And I'm like, no.
I feel like we need to trademark that sound just now. That's like tech blogger.
Yeah.
Pain.
But look, the bottom line is watch the demo on mobilegeeks.com, because honestly, I came into it very skeptical. Like, I'm a software engineer. I know the emulation can be really tricky. Apple pulled it off. It looks like ARM and Microsoft are pulling it off. And they are not interested in making Windows S machines, Windows 10 S. They're really interested in making full-on Windows 10.
That's cool.
We downloaded 7-Zip. The
price point will be like...
They don't know. Like, they didn't talk about that.
But
like,
in general,
this was like a dev kit.
Premium,
you know?
Or like...
They're looking at premium ultra-portable. So like the $1,000 mark right now.
Okay,
like the Flip S we just saw.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's a good segue anyway. But what I was trying to get to is that they're basically... promising, like, you know, much better battery life than what you could get from the equivalent competition right now on Intel. Because, you know, that's the one thing. It's thermally, a 10 nanometer technology makes it thermally so much more efficient. And you know, battery life, unless you're doing some insane gaming or video rendering, I don't think it's going to eat too much battery. And so potentially we'll all have laptops very soon at trade shows that last us the entire day without
love
a charge.
Oh.
And are connected on LTE all the time.
Need it.
Sounds like a tease.
And to me, that's super exciting. So the emulation thing seems to be resolved. And more importantly, they proved it to me. Like, this was really the proof of the pudding for me was, we download 7-Zip, which is just a standard unzipping app, from the 7-Zip website, not from the Windows Store or something.
Right.
And it was Win32 32-bit app.
Yeah.
And we installed it, and it ran just like that. It just didn't feel like we were on a non-Intel machine is basically my takeaway. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see any lag. The only time I could see the system getting slightly stressing when we tried to play 4K video on YouTube. And then you could see, like, it took a little while to start downloading and buffering, but I think it was, like, web or browser optimization issue more than anything else at that point.
I mean, to be honest, I'm fine with 1080p on YouTube. I'm very rarely
I never do 4K. But, you know, I mean, you know, everybody's talking about 4K, right? Sure. And honestly, if I were a manufacturer ASUS and I'd make a machine like that, I would probably only put a 2K display in it. Like, do you really need a 4K display?
I hope that they bring it back down and they stop doing 4K displays.
2K is good, right?
2K is good. 2K is what
we have on our phones. I think it's good enough.
Yeah. But let's segue into ASUS because I have...
Yes, let's talk about
I have a massive gripe.
Oh, no. Not in love.
Not in love.
Oh, God.
Anti-love for this machine, actually. Because
it looks so pretty.
It looks so pretty. It looks so pretty.
I want to bite it.
But the entire ASUS lineup, and all ODMs go through this every once in a while, where they forgot how to make a good keyboard.
Like
the travel on the keys is nice, right? So initially you kind of like type on it and you're like, oh, this is good. They have nice travel, good chiclet keyboards, good mechanical, or like, you know what I mean? Like,
so what
not?
No.
So they forgot to put a strut in the middle of the keyboard. So it dips.
Are you kidding?
Oh, it's bouncy.
The thing was metal.
You can push down on it, and if you push on the back near the display, you can audibly make a sound like tick 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 tick.
Pre-release.
I checked every single one.
And how soon are they hitting the market?
It's across the entire notebook lineup.
So wait,
it's not just the flip.
Even though it's metal, it's not rigid.
It's not rigid. Right, so it makes me like so angry.
So you're like
because
lower
this
in the
device
mid, like,
is yeah, weird. And so and it's bouncy. It's
that seems odd.
Wait a second. How is the key travel? Is it better than MacBook?
Oh, it's 3 times as better as the MacBook.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's what I heard from everyone. Like, but I wanted to hear it from you.
It's like the key travel's amazing. Initially, you're like, "This is baller," and then you're like, "Wait, what happened?"
I got to type on it.
Nobody's noticed it.
I haven't typed on it either.
But like, if you watch my video, it's like everyone in the comments is like, "Holy crap!
The middle
that is crazy." And when you push on the back,
all they had to
like,
do was put a rubber foot there.
I find that's all you have to do.
You buy a tiny little piece of rubber.
No, it's inside.
But I find like they fix that before a consumer can buy one.
I really hope they do, but it's
vocalize that. Because that seems fixable.
So, in case people don't know, we're talking about the ASUS ZenBook Flip S, which is a...
Beautiful.
Do you guys remember the ZenBook Pro from last year? That's what it was. So that was a very much like a Mac, like a smaller MacBook than the MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook. And now imagine that as a convertible where you can flip it yoga style all the way around, turn it into a tablet. That's what the Flip S is.
Very thin.
So I just want them to know because they're
very
phone
gorgeous,
people.
Like nice metal bevels around it, and they have that like great Zen circle in the back that's like 40 steps of amazing metal tooling.
Yeah,
it's
radiant.
Beautiful.
The navy with the gold.
Yeah, it's stunning.
It's a glorious looking machine was it concave or convex? Intentional. It's there for optimizing your hand angle.
We have a few more minutes. I want to kind of maybe go quickly over what you've seen since you're really kind of more tuned in on the PC world. And I know the listeners are not PC people, but they might be interested. We all use PCs or Macs. What are the things that you did not get angry about? Anything that you felt was like, this is cool. This is new. I'm excited about it.
Honestly, the neatest thing that I saw was it was an accessory, and it was just like a biometric like fingerprint sensor that you could plug into a USB.
Plug USB-C and that's it.
No, like, so they just regular USB, and they were coming with USB Type-C later. But like, it's just if you are a business person that doesn't want to have to use a Lenovo ThinkPad, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is like a nice middle ground to like securing your files on the go. It's just like a tiny like $20 dongle.
Nice.
But I kind of thought like it brings like a whole level of biometrics.
I think the Flip S had fingerprint sensor.
It sure did.
I saw that.
It sure did.
I like that.
Was it on the
they got that
on the
part
side,
right?
Right on the edge.
Yeah, right on the edge.
Nice.
I mean, and that, like, there were so many beautiful things about it. It's just
that
the keyboard was
they gotta fix that keyboard. That's funny. There's no choice, obviously.
You know it's Asus. They won't listen to us, sadly. Well, maybe we can talk to Manolo and he'll get it done. Yeah,
get the feedback.
You know Manolo.
Market.
You should let him know.
Yeah, I know some of the folks there.
But here's the thing. Any other laptops or ones, two-in-ones, whatever, that made you go like, ooh, cool?
Laptop-wise, I would say that I really did like the VivoBook line. That they did with the NVIDIA 930 and 940, right? So basically, I think that a lot of people who are giving the Asus lineup with an NVIDIA graphics card have misread what Asus's intention is with this, right? Because I think tech nerds look at a laptop that has a GPU and they're like, that's an old GPU. I can't game my latest game on that. And they all get like Diva AE on it. But I think that actually like this entire lineup is really targeting that kind of like at-home media center, like the people who have cord cut and they want to be able to push 4K to their TV or to their monitor,
right.
and just to have a really strong media-centric laptop for at-home portability.
Right.
People forget that a lot of people never leave their house and use a laptop.
I haven't left this hotel yet this week.
Right.
It's too hot outside. I'm from Canada. I'm like,
Get on the subway to go to Nanyang. You don't have to go outside at all. And
is that true?
The show.
Can I go with you tomorrow morning? Because I'm scared to leave.
That's all the manufacturers are, like the big ones, like Microsoft and Asus and HP.
Yeah, I need to go there tomorrow morning.
But here's the thing. You know your badge is an NFC-free subway thing.
Subway card.
I have to pick it up still, though.
You don't have your badge even?
No, I was going
to. Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Four stops.
Okay.
And then you know what else? If you want to go to the other place, just take a cab. It's 100 New Taiwan dollars.
It was 85. That's what I did. I took a cab up here.
That's pretty good.
That's great. Cool. So obviously we're still in the middle of Computex. Just so you know, is this day two, right? Or day one?
It's day two.
Yeah, day two. Because we had day zero was press day. That was Asus.
And
day one, day two.
Yeah.
And there's three more days?
Three more days. I mean, my day one was also Asus. So I only...
You and me both.
Yeah, I only basically started...
It was like holiday here, wasn't it?
And it was a holiday in the US. I got none of this morning I woke up because it was Tuesday in the US and all my emails got answered.
Yeah, yeah.
I got like 50 emails to answer instead of like 10 important emails to answer. It was funniest. But a quick question, actually, speaking of Computex, we're done, right? We're not expecting anything else.
We're just looking for quirky cool on the floor now.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Trademark that too. Quirky cool
shit. Yeah. That's what we need for sure. But anyway, overall, what do you think of this Computex? You haven't been on the show floor.
I love the city of Taipei.
Isn't it great? People here
are amazing.
I know.
It's so friendly.
And the food is good too.
I can just move here tomorrow. No problem. Except I melt if I leave the hotel or my house.
I liked it. I mean, this show
to me. You think it was bigger, better?
I thought that there was like significant, interesting, forward-thinking technology, like fabric soft sensors, and finally power to light. Y-light is like powered lighting.
Powered, wireless power.
Right, and so like they're ready commercially, right? And they're just looking for distributors and partners, right? So I mean, like a lot of really interesting enabling technology has been released this show. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's not like we're seeing like all these high signal things. Apart from the biggest high signal for me is the amount of solid desktop replacement that has emerged on the market. Right?
Yeah,
like that the Titan that you covered at MSI.
Yeah,
right?
So
that massive Titan.
I had no idea what I was talking about, by the way. So if you want to watch me make a complete ass of myself live on video,
I put it up.
You have to go to the German site for this.
MobileGeeks.de
and go. And look at the MSI
Titan
story and watch me make an ass of myself talking about gaming laptops for a minute or two each. I had no idea what I was talking about.
SLI, this means two hard drives.
No,
two video cards.
It's true, right?
It's true.
Crushed it.
I did edit out a lot of stupid things that when I watched it later, I'm like, I just said that. That was not right. I mean, I know enough because I worked in video games, but it's just like, I don't know what the state of the art is. And that big Titan one, like, it was like 2 inches thick. I'm like, who wants that?
But literally, it's that one straight up, a desktop replacement that you can carry around, right? That uncompromising.
Does it even have a battery?
I don't. Doesn't matter.
Does that battery last 10 minutes?
It should. It doesn't need to. It's just about being able to carry your desktop around with you.
You know, there was a bigger one, the older Titan that was there.
That one you could almost not lift.
Desktop keys on it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it's 4 inches thick.
That's awesome.
It was. And
are
it
they
weighs,
making
like,
them out of titanium and ceramic yet?
No.
Because that's what we need next
year. And that's
year.
The other thing that I have to say. Last year, I did a few gaming laptops for you that seemed to make much more sense to me. The Gigabyte ones, they looked like they were business computers with a little bit of color. Mm. And they had specs that I felt like, oh, these are light and thin enough that and powerful enough that for video editing, I'd dig one of those. But like those MSI ones are so over the top, like plastics everywhere. Like, well, they're made of metal partially, but it's like it's just like the aesthetics of these things. I don't understand why the gaming laptops have to be so ugly. Razer showed us the way. Why can't everyone follow? Yeah.
It's funny. A lot of the guys on my team, they've all, you know, they used to be all MacBook Pro people, and now I've seen over the last couple of years this like trend changing. And yeah, one of the guys has the, like Alex Dobie switched to the one you just mentioned, the beautiful one.
The Razer.
I sense like that blacked out look. Yeah. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. One of the guys had the Gigabyte. What's it called?
Gigabyte.
I don't even know what this thing is.
What is that?
Yeah. And he's like, well, I looked at all these, but for the price point and the specs, it was good. And he's doing lots of video editing on it.
Yeah,
really likes it. And, you know, reasonably priced. And I'm like, cool.
What are you using right now?
I've got the Microsoft Surface Performance Base. Because I spent $200 on the insurance, and they didn't have last year's model to give me, so I got a free upgrade.
Performance Base was that? Is that?
So it's got the big graphics card in it.
The Surface Book,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, so
I missed that one.
The Performance Base just means that it's got the bigger graphics card in it.
So from this podcast, you've now learned what we all use when we travel. MacBook 12-inch. Surface Book with the performance package.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the AMG version of the laptop. And then you're using a 15-inch with Touch Bar.
Yeah, which I really want to go back to PC. You know, I used to be a PC person all my life. And then I think it was Dieter Bohn converted me to Mac.
Eight years ago.
He said, you know why he did it? Just to pawn off his old ones so he could buy new ones. He's like, Kevin, you should really switch. Like, I don't know. He's like, if you switch, you can buy this one off me, and so you can buy a new one. And he did that like 3 years in a row. And then eventually, I just was like too lazy to switch back. But I really, really want to. So I'm going to,
I
still play.
Do you know what you should look at?
Yeah.
Okay. I would, from this show, my switch from Mac to Windows, check out the ASUS ROG Zephyr.
That's a gaming laptop.
Yeah, but
it looks kind of badass.
I'm looking it up right now.
It's kind of got this two-tone on
how
the
do you
back.
Spell Zephyr?
I don't even know.
Z-Y-F-E-R.
Growing up, my parents drove a Zephyr. Ford Zephyr?
I think that's how you pronounce it. I might be pronouncing it wrong because I only read this.
I'm going to look this thing up.
Anyway, what do you think I should go for? You know what I like? You know, I want super light, super thin. Horsepower is kind of secondary. What do you think I should switch to?
Honestly, with the keyboard, if they could fix the keyboard.
The Flip S.
I like the Flip S, but honestly, that MateBook, the MateBook X, that's a really nice machine.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Is it on the show floor anywhere?
No.
Is Huawei not here?
No, Huawei's not here. So I was at their launch event in Berlin.
Oh, right. Taiwan doesn't exist for China.
Yeah.
Huawei cannot be here. I forgot.
Yeah.
Dope. All right. Well, should we wrap it up? Do you guys want to plug yourselves? Maybe Nicole, you want to start first?
Yeah. So Nicole Scott from MobileGeeks.com and MobileGeeks.de. So two of them.
And where do we find you on the on Twitters and stuff?
Nicole_Scooter.
Yeah.
I have split personality disorder. So
500 websites are about to be dumped into my podcast.
Yeah, if you want the business, Kevin, it's at Kevin Michaluk on Twitter. And that's the co-founder, chief operating officer of Mobile Nation. So yeah, we do have lots of websites with iMore.
Do you want to actually tell people who don't know who Mobile Nations is some of these websites?
Yeah, so we've been around for many, many years, 15 years, evolving. You know, we never thought Palm was going to die, but unfortunately it did. So we learned very early to diversify. So we used to have Trio Central and Pre Central, which are amazing. Then we have CrackBerry has a resurgence in 2017.
Somehow.
Crazy. Android Central, Windows Central.
iMore.
Yeah, Rene Ritchie. We mentioned him this show.
Cool.
VR heads. They all have YouTube channels and that. And, you know, Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher, is part of our
He was on my podcast last week.
Fantastic addition to the network. And you can find CrackBerry Kevin on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube if you want to learn more about the Key One, which was fun to talk about today.
Yeah. All right. So you guys know you can find me on Twitter as Tank Girl with like the comic book character without the vowels. It's at TNKGRL. MobileTechPodcast.com is URL for this podcast. If you want to subscribe or whatever, that's the place to go. I want to thank World Podcast for being the logistics and technical guru of this podcast and making it possible for me to do this every week. Stay tuned. I've got a really cool guest next week. I'll be honest with you, I'm going to be asking another, I mean, Nicole is a phone NPC person. Mm-hmm. She knows her phones. But the guest I have next week is more of a PC person, but we're going to talk phone. So it'll be very interesting to get a PC-centric view. And I say PC, I mean computer.
I feel like you're crushing it with guests already. You've had us on the show, Mr. Mobile.
My first guest was Richard Lai.
Richard Lai.
Wow.
You're setting the bar pretty high here.
Yeah.
I know. Well, there you go. Well, thanks, guys. Stay tuned for next week. And that's a wrap.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.